My name is Kate Rowles and I'm interviewing you for the Wellcome Trust as you're taking part in Anthony Gormley's artwork One Another. The date today is the 2nd of October 2009 and the time is 5:15 p.m. If I can please ask you to say your full name, your age and where you're from.
Name's Sean Robertson, I'm 45 and I live in London now, but I'm originally from Liverpool.
And how are you today?
A little bit nervous, but we're getting there.
What was it that motivated you to apply to be part of One Another?
Just really interested in Anthony Gormley's work, because as I say, I'm from Liverpool originally, just near Crosby Beach, so been a few times up to see another place up there. Really fantastic, and I love the way everyone sort of takes his work to heart. It's not something you just look at, you really get involved with it. And so I was excited that he was doing something down here. And then one of my friends from the rugby club I'm with was also on the plinth in the middle of August. And so it was really exciting being down in the crowd watching him. And I just decided to apply. I didn't apply till last week. Got a last minute place, so really excited.
And when you found out that you had got a place, what happened then for you?
I found out about 4 hours ago. So it was okay. And you've got all these ideas when you apply of what you're going to do. And then it's like, well, I may not get a place, so I'll just leave them as, park them as ideas. And then when you know you've got a place, it's like, okay, right, what am I going to do? Luckily my boss said to me, go and take the afternoon off, go home and get ready and do us proud kind of thing. So it was quite good.
And so how have you decided to spend your hours?
One of the reasons that I really applied, that got me to apply, was I was watching the coverage of Jug, who got naked on the was it August bank holiday weekend, and some of the feedback in certain bits of the media were really sort of negative about why he was doing it. And it was like, well, is this are you commenting on what he did, or are you commenting on your own feelings? So what I decided to do today was, I've got some posters to go up, which is I know what I'm doing, taking my clothes off. What do you think I'm doing, and what do your thoughts say about me, and what do your thoughts say about you? But I'm only doing that for sort of half the hour, and then I'm going to get dressed into my rugby kit and shamelessly plug our rugby club, King's Cross Steelers, which is Britain's and the world's first gay rugby team, which we started about 15 years ago now, and it's going strong. So I'm going to have a few of the guys coming down as well.
Were you one of the founders of that rugby team?
No, I joined about a year after it was founded. I've been on the committee since. I think I went to my first game, and somebody discovered I could, you know, put a spreadsheet together. So it was join the committee, and I've been there ever since. And I was the chairman for 6 years, and now I'm sort of the club treasurer, so taking care of all the money side, which is very exciting.
What's the name of the rugby club?
King's Cross Steelers. We're based based in West Ham. We were founded in King's Cross, where the name comes from, but we're actually based in West Ham in East London, and we play in the Essex Leagues. So we're doing not too bad this season, actually. Won two games, lost one, it's okay.
And what's been the journey for that rugby club? How have they developed?
It was difficult at first. I mean, there's been we've never experienced any homophobia about it. It was more a fact of puzzlement, really, of why do you play, why are you playing rugby? But both from the rugby community thinking, well, if you can play rugby, why do you need a separate rugby club kind of thing? And from the gay community of gay men don't play sports. So we've had some of that. But as soon as you start playing the game, and especially winning matches, people go, oh, you do actually just, you are just rugby players. And to answer the question of why you need a separate club, we really answer it is as it's the same as like a club like London Welsh. You don't need to be Welsh to play for it, and if you're Welsh in London, you can play for any other team. But there's a community, people either live together, socialise together, So they play rugby together. So it's the same as having a community club or a village club, a village rugby club or a works team or something. It's just something for the gay community to latch on to. And it's been really successful. There's more teams in Britain now around the country and across the world as well. It's really taken off in America as well.
More gay rugby teams?
Yeah, yeah. There must be about 40 now, 45, something like that now. So mainly in America, which is strange, because you don't think of America being a sort of rugby nation. It's really taken off there.
And your team were the first?
We were the first one in the world, yeah. And then the second one was in Manchester, founded about 2 years after us, and then one in San Francisco, and it just sort of snowballed on from there.
And how are you feeling about your sort of the nudity element of your hour today?
If you've ever been around a rugby club, there's no problem with nudity. Although the girl behind the bar doesn't get upset if you if you get too close to the bar.
And do you feel like you're representing yourself today?
I think I'm just being me, and I just want to question why people have got this hang up about nudity. I can understand pornography and things like that, that people want to keep private, and that's fine, but the human body, I don't understand why people have got this real hang up about it. And just reading some of the comments, some of it is to do with a sort of religious element to it, and I'm an atheist, so I don't believe in God or anything, but I can't understand that either, because if you do believe in a God, then you must look at, you know, beautiful mountain range or lakes and things and think, well, wow, that's beautiful. So why what must be in your mind your God's best creation, the human being, why do you want, oh, that's disgusting, cover it up? And is it just a sort of throwback to Victorian era and things? Especially when people are like, you know, that's shocking for my children to look at. Well, you know, if children just accept that's a human body, you know, like they accept any other bit of nature, as that's how it is. So if you take away that sort of feeling behind it, it just becomes another thing and nothing to be worried about.
And today you're going to be on the fourth plinth yourself.
Yes.
In Trafalgar Square. What does that mean to you personally in the context of your life?
It's just a huge opportunity and, you know, fantastic thing to happen, because it's very rare you get a chance to sort of stand and be looked at. Hopefully for the right reasons, and, you know, the old Andy Warhol thing, everyone has their 15 minutes of fame. Well, to get an hour is fantastic.
And can I ask you to say a little bit about yourself now?
How would I describe that? 45, bisexual, originally from Liverpool, came down here 20 years ago to work. Working in office, moderately successful, I think, at what I do. What is that else about me? I was incredibly shy when I was a kid, really shy. I was always the one just sitting there saying absolutely nothing in a group situation, and would just sit at the back of the class and sort of melt into the wall kind of thing. And I think being down in London and being in a situation where it's strange, you can hide, but you can't hide kind of thing. And especially with the rugby club as well, that's really helped me bring me out of my shell, and now you can't shut me up, as you just gathered.
And why do you think you were shy as a child?
I don't know. I suppose a bit of a loner, really. I've got a sister and a brother, but my sister's 7 years older and my brother's 8 years younger. So I was sort of, you know, by the time I was doing things as a sort of 6, 7, 8 year old, my sister was already a teenager and doing her own things with her mates, and my brother hadn't been born then. So I think I was always happy with my own company. always used to go travelling on my own. As soon as I was, I think the earliest you could sort of travel, being in Liverpool, your natural point of travel was over to Ireland and things. And as soon as I got to 14 and you were able to travel on your own, I used to be away. And I suppose I take after my grandmother after that. She was a great traveller and always off doing things. And so always happy with my own company. And so I suppose just shyness.
You went to Ireland on your own when you were 14?
I still do, actually. I love travelling as well, so quite happily to travel on my own, but you know, happy to go with other people as well. I've got a partner now, I've been with for just come up for 6 years now, so I hate flying, so we don't fly anywhere, so much to his annoyance. He's got to know a lot of ships and cars and trains.
How did you meet your partner?
In the pub he works in, just around the corner. We'd had a rugby committee meeting one Sunday afternoon, and we came into town for a drink, and he was working behind the bar, so we just started chatting, and that was it. Been together ever since.
And your working life, can I ask about that?
Mm.
What do you do?
I'm a project manager at the Department for Business, Peter Mandelson's department. Again, it's one of those things, I sort of went along to do a particular job for 12 months, and I've been there just coming for eight years now. It's one of those things, I think, once they find someone who is sort of capable of stringing a sentence together and writing sort of legibly, they keep you, kind of thing. So I've done a few different jobs in the same department now. So I'm now running the program management office. In that.
The program management office, what does that mean?
So that's all sort of mainly IT programs, but we also have accommodation programs as well, moving people, buildings, but most of it's IT. And we get a project manager in to do a particular project, and they have staff, and I run the sort of governance of the management office, so I have them all feeding in their reports to me, so and then I compile reports, and so we know where we're going, because obviously it's a huge department, especially now we've got the education and skills bit as well, innovation and skills, so it's a massive department, huge budget, so there's a lot of projects going on all the time. At the moment we've got things running from redoing the intranet, our own intranet, to new human resources system, to a new database for looking after who goes to the Royal Garden parties and things. Huge spectrum of things going on. So there's a lot of money involved, so it's important that, you know, it's all taxpayers' money, of course, so it's important that we keep track of what we're doing and that we're doing it right and on time, on budget, kind of.
Is the Department for Business part of the government?
Yes, yeah. It's one of the biggest departments now. It was the old Department of Trade and Industry, and then it got merged with the Universities and Skills Department last year, so we've got all that together. So we do everything from, I say, universities to the car scrappage scheme that's going on at the moment, to helping business, cutting red tape, doing things like the minimum wage, everything to do with that. It's just keeping the economy going, which is a challenge at the moment.
And what was your route into this field of work?
I just sort of drifted into office work, really. Actually, when I was at school, one of my choices at school was to do cooking. I wanted to be a chef, and they wouldn't let me do it because they said it was a girls' subject, so I wasn't allowed to do that. And I'd already chosen business studies, commerce as one of my other options, so I said, well, I'll do typing as well. Considering everyone uses a keyboard now, which was pretty good. So I just went into the commercial side and started office work. I've done everything. I sort of started off working on the docks in Liverpool and the nature reserve, doing their admin. I've worked for British Telecom, the coal board, banks, everything. And then I say this is my longest spell, nearly 8 years now in the Department for Business, which is it's a nice place to work, actually. Some really nice people there. It's a friendly environment, so it's quite good. And especially I've got a lovely boss who told me at very short notice to take this afternoon off so I could get ready for today.
Who are you doing this for today?
Me. Definitely me. I want to sort of get some publicity for the rugby club as well, because it's something I really hold dear to my heart. But no, it's for me. It's why not?
And what's important to you at the moment in your life?
I think my sort of family and loved ones and people I care about. I'm not a huge believer in a career. It's nice to have. I've always worked, so it's nice to have a job. And it's nice to have a job that pays you decent money, so you can do the things you want to do. But I'm not a huge. Yeah, I don't have a career mapped out. I just want to live a decent life and enjoy myself and be nice to people around me and things.
What were your three words that you chose?
It was think for yourself.
Would you like to elaborate on that?
I think I get upset with especially the religious side of things, where it all seems so negative to me when I hear people who've got strong religious faith. And I'm sure that's not true of everyone. I'm sure I'm generalising. But there was a lot of, you can't do that, and you can't do that, and you mustn't do that. And I'm thinking, just think for yourself. You know, you might believe in an afterlife, but for the most part, you've only got one life. Enjoy it and just think for yourself. And don't be just tied up in this sort of dogma that, you know, if you deny yourself sort of freedom and pleasure, then very soon you won't be here. And what have you done with your life?
And today you're going to be on the fourth plinth.
Yep.
You're going to be nude for half of it.
For half of it, yeah.
And then you're doing your rugby outfit.
Yeah.
Have you got any hopes or fears or expectations about your hour?
No, not really. I think I've watched quite a lot of the other plinthers, and I think the reaction to most people has been quite generous, actually, from the public. You know, there'll be a few heckles, but then I'm sure. But then there always is, and just ignore the heckles and take the applause, I think.
Do you, in order to be nude, do you feel quite comfortable with your own
body? Yeah, I mean, it's nothing special, but it all works, and nothing's fallen off yet. So.
And is there anything else that you would like to mention or to add before you go and stand out there today?
I just hope everyone sort of enjoys the experience as much as I do. And I think it's just been a fantastic project. There's been just a huge spectrum of public life up there, and I think it's fantastic. And it's a pity it's got to end, although I can see why it needs to be a contained item. And I can't think of anywhere else that you could actually do this. There's very few places in Britain or the world, actually. I suppose there's Times Square, New York, things like that, but it's such a unique environment to do it in. I'm just so grateful for having had the chance at the last minute to go on.
Well,
hope I don't fall off.
Thank you very much.
Okay.